Hello, everybody. Cal Banyan here. This is Cal Banyan's Hypnosis Etc. with Meredith Locker. How you doing, Meredith?
I'm great, Cal. How are you?
I'm so excited. I'm having so much fun doing this kind of with the streaming video with our friends out there in our hypno space. Hey, let's see here. What do I want to do today? Oh, I want to tell everybody, if you're watching this anywhere, like, I don't know, YouTube, and there's a whole bunch of other places, iTunes, where you can watch this, but the very best place to watch it is calbanyan.com, because right down below this video, we've got all the text and links and everything we talk about, and so that's the very best way. Hey, help us out. Tell your friends around the world that we have this. You realize we're almost 120, we're like 117, 118, something like that, free hypnosis programs right here. All you got to do is click play on your computer, and you've got some information you're probably not going to get in class. All right. What should we do now, Meredith?
I think we should answer some people's questions.
Oh, let me squeeze in a couple announcements.
Okay.
Let's see. Again, just a quick announcement. I got two courses coming up. The NGH-approved Banyan Hypnosis and Hypnotherapy Super Courses with 5-Path and 7-Path. Got one coming up in July and one coming up in November this year. And hey, if you guys are watching this program in 2010, 11, whatever, go to hypnosiscenter.com. I've got the list of all my classes there. You always want to check to see if you can register early, because we always have discounts for early registration. I can still squeeze in that we've also, James Ramey, he's the master at ultra-depth hypnosis. He's got a couple of trainings coming up, one in June and one in November. I'm going to put a link right down there so you can go get the information on that. He offers a very substantial discount for early registration. And let's see, we've still got questions coming in about our 7-Path teachers training. What is all that about? For years, I've been teaching 5-Path and 7-Path. And some of our people, they went to short courses where I just taught 5-Path, or they've been trained through the DVD series. And the only way you can learn 7-Path, now 7-Path is a very special mind-body-spirit approach to self-hypnosis. And the only way you can learn that is live. Can't get it on a DVD set. So if you want that training to be able to bring your clients or yourself to a new level, all you got to do is either join our regular certification course, or go to our Week of Power course, or go to the 7-Path Self-Hypnosis Teachers course in the pre-convention portion of the NGH convention this year. I'll have that link down below. Hey, I'm having so much fun with this whole idea of, gosh, why are there so many doggone white people in the profession of hypnotism? I'm having fun. I want to get the word out. Now, of course, you know, if you live in other countries, it's not such a big deal. But in the United States, you go to a hypnosis activity, it's like a white people's convention. There are some other people there. You know, you got your Native Americans, you've got the black African descent people, and you've got your Hispanic people. But a lot of these people at the convention, it's either a very, very, very small minority of the people at the convention, or they come from other countries. So I'm really leading the charge to see if we can get more people involved from different ethnic groups and racial groups, and because hypnosis is for everybody. Let's educate about that, and along with the many groups we have on our hypnospace.com, we've got a group where we're discussing that right now. So let's bring hypnosis to the world and to everybody in the United States, no matter of where they've come from. Okay. I think that's it. Let's talk about some questions.
Okay. Well, I've got some questions that I pulled off of our 5 and 7th Path group on Yahoo. And there have been some great answers, but I wanted to bring this more to the general public. And these questions are specific to alcohol, but I really think that they could be about any kind of an addictive substance. I mean, it could be about drugs or cigarettes, those kinds of things. But I'll go ahead and ask them as they were asked here in the group. First question: when I take in an alcoholic client, should I schedule them more than once a week?
First of all, as always, you know, kind of not a disclaimer, but a warning. Make sure that It's legal for you to work with drug and alcohol issues in the state where you're working. And I recommend that you partner up with either a psychologist, psychiatrist, or a drug and alcohol professional as you do the work. Once you've done that, my suggestion is that whenever you're doing any kind of strongly addicting substance, it could be alcohol or it could be any other kind of drug, that you, in the first week, you see them at least two times. It could be like a Monday, Wednesday, or a Wednesday, Friday, or even a Monday, Wednesday, Friday. You want to get in there and really give some good suggestions. It could be either a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or a Monday, Tuesday, or a Wednesday, Friday, or a Tuesday, Thursday, two or three times a week, because these strongly addicting substances, you really need to do two things. You need to do some good direct suggestion work to overcome the habit, but then you also need to go in and get at the cause of the problem. Because if you don't get at the cause of the problem and you wait a whole week, direct suggestion, you know, quite often doesn't last more than about 2 days, maybe 2 weeks max. And those people that the direct suggestion work alone isn't enough to get them to the next week, they'll think that hypnosis isn't working. So get them two, three times a week to get them started off with.
So, Cal, would that be for the first week, first 2 weeks? What's your recommendation there?
Well, I think you really have to take, you know, every client into consideration. If you think doing it more frequently each week would benefit the client, then do it. I typically do double sessions, and I have most of my clients fly in from out of state or out of the country, and I have to squish the work into a short period of time. So, but that's not ideal. I think, and I'm going to speak ideally, I would get two minimum to three maximum sessions in 1 week. And then I would start spacing them out once a week. And then if the person could benefit from some follow-up, I might even have, after it looks like all the work is done, a follow-up session a month later, and maybe even 3 months later, until we can make sure that, you know, the problem is resolved. By the way, this is one of my pet peeves. There's some people out there, they go, oh, I just do one session for everything. I do one session for stop smoking. I do one session for this and one session for that. You know, I don't, and then they say, and my results are 99, 44, 100% successful. How do you know? If you're not doing follow-up work with your people, how do you know? At the very, very bare minimum, like if you're not a five pathers, it's not five sessions, but it's going to, you know, be four, five, six, seven sessions, something like that, to get through the process, depending on a number of factors. But let's say you do some other kind of process, and you do two sessions. At least you have an idea of how effective the first session was. So the multiple session approach is the only way, or at least some kind of follow-up approach, where you can know if what you're doing is successful. So that's, you know, these one session wonders. I just, unless they're religiously following the people, following up every single client at a 1 week, 1 month, 2 months later, then they really shouldn't be making these statements that I'm successful with everybody in one session, because they really don't know. They could, at the end of the session, saying, I love you, I'm over this problem, and then 3 days later, they're drinking or smoking or, you know, eating, overeating again. So, and they're just not coming back because they think the one session should have worked. Well, you got me on a tirade there, didn't you?
I like it. And you know what, Cal? I couldn't agree more. I really believe that people are creatures of habit. And I believe that when people come in and they've had this problem for a while, that they're going to even have a hard time believing that they're fixed or that they're cured of the issue or that they no longer have the problem after one session. And so even if maybe you did amazing work, and even though they may have gotten to the point where it was accepted enough in their subconscious mind that it could overwrite and rewrite these programs that have been playing before, even if you were amazing at your job, I think a lot of people have a hard time believing it, and they need a few more sessions to accept that kind of vast change can occur.
Exactly. And on the other hand, let me also say that you don't want to just run up the number of sessions. I've heard people you know, talk about trying to get more sessions out of their client, and that is first unethical. And in the long term, it's not going to serve you in your practice. The lesser number of sessions that you can keep it down to and still be wonderfully successful is what you want to go for. Because if, you know, this is a referral business. By the time you have been doing this a while, more and more of your clients should not be coming from advertising, but from referral. And everybody that goes to see the hypnotist usually tells somebody, you know, one, two, three, four people. And then the next time they run into those people after they've seen you, they say, hey, did you go see the hypnotist? And they say, yes. Well, were you successful? And when your client says, yes, I was fabulously successful, the person says, well, you know, how much and how many sessions did it take? In this prospective client's eyes, it's a gamble to go see the hypnotist. And if they're thinking, okay, it was four sessions and $100 a session, that's $400. They might think, you know, you had success with that, I'm going to risk it. But if it was $100 and 20 sessions, now it's a $2,000 risk. You're going to have a higher referral rate if you can keep the number of sessions you need to be successful to a minimum. Any input on that, Meredith?
Ah, good catch. Yeah, I agree completely. I work with a lot of really high-profile, high-income people working in West LA. I mean, it's definitely a wealthy area. And so, I understand I'm working with people who probably could afford to pay for more sessions if they want. But as far as I'm concerned, I don't care if it's someone who's just barely scraping by to come in or someone who has a really big account. I'm going to I'm going to focus on getting the work done in the least number of sessions. And if they then choose afterwards to continue to do work on themselves because they feel so good and they want to, that's up to them. But I want to make it clear that we can do the process in, you know, an adequate number of sessions, so it's not this ridiculous ongoing process. I completely agree.
Beautiful. Hey, you know, I forgot to set the timer. Do you have any idea how long we are in this?
Yeah, I think that we're going to go just to, we've got about 15 more minutes.
We have 15 more minutes?
Maybe not quite that much, maybe 10 more minutes.
Okay, because we're shooting for 20 minutes, so we've been talking for quite a while. Okay, let's go on to the next question then.
Okay, next question. Should I state absolutely no drinking on the day of the appointment? And again, this can count for other drugs. Should I state absolutely no using of the substance on the day of the appointment?
I guess it depends on the substance. If someone is, you know, most of the people that I see for alcohol, they're abusing alcohol, and that means they're using too much or they're having episodic behavior. And if that person comes in and they've had a drink, I'm still going to work with them. As long as they're hypnotizable, I'm going to be able to work with them. And that just requires that they be able to focus on what I'm doing. And so obviously if they're drunk, unable to focus, then I wouldn't do the session. But realistically, having a drink is not going to be a problem. Some people require that the person they're working with be in abstinence, and I don't require that. If I'm working with an illegal drug that's, you know, mind altering, I mean, if someone is taking acid or something like that, you know, LSD, mushrooms or something like that, they can't be tripping as I do the session with them, and of course it would have to be an abstinence. So do it on a case by case basis. Some people work in a treatment center where the person must be in abstinence, so of course that would rule more importantly than anything else. Does that kind of answer it for you?
Yeah, I think that answers the question. I recommend that my clients do not use the day of session. I want to make sure that it kind of goes to the same thing. I want to do the work in the shortest number of sessions possible, and I feel like if they've been drinking or if they're, you know, smoking pot or what have you, their reaction time isn't necessarily going to be the same. Their ability to focus isn't necessarily going to be the same, and so I would really rather them not use when they're working with me. And of course, with the hallucinogenic drugs, it's an absolute not. If I've got somebody who wants to work with me who has been using methamphetamine, heroin, LSD, any of those kinds of drugs, I will not work with them until they've been through a detox program, and then I'll start working with them immediately after that. That's a personal choice. Doesn't have to be the way you do it. It doesn't sound like, Cal, you do it that way, but that's the way I handle it.
Well, let me say one thing that is a benefit of your approach. And I think that what we need to do is really be client-centered in this aspect and work with the clients where we can work with them. But when we require someone to be in abstinence, that can be a benefit because they are not self-medicating the emotions with this drug or alcohol that we want to work with. And so that may allow us to get to the underlying emotional content more readily if they're not medicating with the alcohol or drugs. So, you know, I go by what I think is going to help the client at the time.
Yeah, I agree. I've made exceptions in certain cases, but, you know, I kind of have created a certain way that I generally handle cases, and then I deal with it on a case-by-case basis. So the next question, do most alcoholics wean off of drinking? And this also, once again, can be applicable to other substances. I think that what was being asked here was, as opposed to going cold turkey, do they typically need to wean off?
If they're going to do cold turkey, quit suddenly, you definitely want to make sure that there's some kind of alcohol drug abuse counselor there to do the proper assessment. They might need a medical intervention and that kind of thing. I like weaning people off. But if I have someone, a lot of times they want to quit. I mean, that's their mind frame. And I say, you know, my job is to help you get what you want to the very best of my ability. And so I'm going to meet the client wherever they need to be met on that. So I can either do abstinence if that's what they want to do, or we can do weaning them off. Because I believe that if we go after the underlying cause, they're not going to want to do it anymore. They're really self-medicating, anxiety, guilt, anger, this kind of thing. And what we're going to be able to do is when we remove the anger, it's kind of like this. If someone has had headaches all their life, and, you know, they find out there's this drug called Excedrin, and it's for headaches. And guess what? That person is going to take that stuff every day. They're going to have it stashed in their glove compartment. They're going to have it in their office. They're going to have it, you know, everywhere. And then take that medication. Why? Because they have headaches. And if someone is drinking because of anxiety, you know, fear or anger or guilt or any other emotion, that's the same as the headache. If we get rid of the headache through any means, medical means, hypnotic means, then the desire for the Excedrin goes away. So if we go, if the person is self-medicating anxiety, guilt, anger, and so on, and we get rid of that through any means, hypnosis or any means, then the desire to drink will go away. Unless there's secondary gain issues, and of course, phase five of five path goes after secondary gain issues. So I'm totally willing to do the kind of weaning them off. I just want their desire to go away, and I've been successful with that, and had months and even years follow up with clients with that. Hey, this is so fun having the video. I'm watching the Our Hypnospace chat thing down here, and people are kind of chatting, not behind my back, but they have these conversations going on. They're talking about the Five Path DVD set and some off-topic stuff, too. They're just getting to know each other. So that's all good. Hey, how are we doing on time?
I think we've got time for just one more question.
Okay.
So on the same topic, how do I bring up a feeling in a client who loves to drink?
Okay. Well, if they're in somnambulism, threshold of somnambulism or deeper, the subconscious mind knows why it's doing this. And we get them in the state of like some level of somnambulism. We just simply suggest to them there's a feeling inside you that has everything to do with your desire to drink. And we just count from one to five. And as we count from one to five, that feeling goes up as strong, powerful as it's ever been. Another thing that we can do is we can just do a date time regression back to an earlier time when they were drinking. And we can just find out, what are you thinking? The Fantastic Five. What's happening? What are you thinking? What are you feeling? How old are you? And have you felt this way before? And we can then hook off the affect bridge. And that's, I sound like a broken record. I talk about the same stuff over and over again sometimes. But you know what? It doesn't matter if it's a phobia. It doesn't matter if it's nail biting. It doesn't matter if it's athletic performance. I do 5-PATH. I'm going to go phase 1, preparation, testing, and convincing. Phase 2, age regression to cause, and also age progression to so the person can get a mental expectation of success. Then we're going to phase 3, which is forgiveness of others. It usually has to do with the persons who started the problem or the person that they have the most emotional baggage with. And the forgiveness of self is phase 4. And then finally, if they have secondary gain issues, that means there's some extra benefit to keeping the problem other than what started it, then phase 5 will go in there and neutralize that. Did I cover that question well enough, do you think?
I think you absolutely did. Yes, thank you so much.
All right, then let's wrap it up.
It has been so much fun having you tune in. I love this live streaming. I love all of you guys who are listening to this or downloading it and watching it or however it is that you're watching it, preferably on calbanion.com, because anything that we have discussed, any little notes, any little links, all those things are listed just down below the screen, and so it makes it so much easier. And then you can go down and list some comments or ask some questions right there if you want to. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you however it is that you're watching. And please do send your questions and comments to us any way that you want to get it to us. My email address is meredith@yourpathhypnosis.com. Thank you. Signing off.
All right. And this is Cal Banyan, hypnosis.org, O-R-G, because we organize world hypnosis for you. Banyan Hypnosis Mall, hypnosiscenter.com, where I have all my course schedule. And, of course, our favorite new project, which is our hypnospace. .com. It's not new. It's been around for a couple of years, but I'm always excited about it. Cal Banyan, signing off. This recording is the property of Cal Banyan and Cal Banyan's Banyan Publishing Incorporated. All rights reserved, for private use only, may not be duplicated without written permission.